Okay, welcome to WPM, Writing, Publishing, and Marketing. This is the May 2019 podcast that we're recording tonight. And for those of you listening to the podcast, we're at WSEA Community Radio in Portsmouth, and we have three authors here on the stage with us. And for Mother's Day, we're going to switch it up. Instead of having one author talk about writing, one about publishing, and one about marketing, we've asked three, we'll give Elizabeth credit for this, we've asked three authors who are mothers to talk about writing, publishing, and mothering. So each author will have about 10 minutes to do their presentation, and then we'll open it up for questions and comments. And I would ask that you save your questions until all three presentations have been done. I just wanted, for those listening to the podcast and coming to it for the first time, let you know what this series is all about. My wife Marilyn Carter and I have a small publishing company, and we wanted to offer a series where we could have authors every month talk about the whole writing process, from when you get the idea for your book through the writing and the editing and the revising and then the publishing and the marketing. And so all of these podcasts are available on our website. It's MAAT, publishing.net. And you'll see a link to the podcast at the top there. And if you go into the menu and look at my writer's journal, for many of the podcasts, I've done a kind of highlights summary, because the recordings run sometimes for an hour and a half. And if you don't have time to listen to the whole thing, I try to say, well, this author talked about this subject at 4 minutes into her presentation or whatever. So please go to Mott Publishing and listen to some of the other podcasts. Tonight we had Elizabeth DeVere, Maggie Van Galen, and Harry Moore. And they are all authors, and they are all mothers. And I'm going to turn it over to Elizabeth.
Okay, thank you so much. I want to start by saying thank you so much to Steve and Marilyn for having us tonight. And talk about, super quick, about how I got this idea. So I came, like 2 months ago, I came and did this podcast, probably my first speaking engagement in my entire life, I think. And two things. First of all, I had my idea, I had a concept, it was all typed out. I had my whole talk, I practiced it a few times, knew what I was doing, came in, did it, done. And tonight, it just wasn't, that process wasn't working for me this time, so I'm gonna kind of wing it. We'll just hope that it flies. And the other thing that happened after that, I went home, and I don't even know, I think I was just thinking about this experience of being a writer and being a mom with kids in the house, which I think is a specific experience. And I thought, you know, it would be really neat to talk about that. And my brain went to, it'd be cool if it was like around Mother's Day. Oh, wait a minute, it is around Mother's Day. And who else would be there in your imagination, Elizabeth? Oh, well, I think Maggie Van Galen and, oh, Harriet, that would be amazing. And somehow it's all come together, and this is like the culmination of my daydream. It's like outstanding. So I guess I first of all would start off just by introducing myself and telling you what I do. Elizabeth DeVere, I'm in Georgetown, Massachusetts, and I've been writing for something like, let's say, 17 years or something like that. Gosh, that's a long time. And I'm working on my fourth novel. I really do write long-form fiction exclusively, and there's no relationship among any of my books, except that they all actually have a very complicated point of view on motherhood. When I was thinking about it, I realized if there was a college student way in the future looking at all my books and looking for a theme, I feel like they're all these tortured mothers, you know. And it's true. I mean, I kind of think that from childhood, I understood that that raising children and having some kind of a life of your own would be a challenge. And so I put it off really as long as possible. And I was sort of standing on the brink of my life And it was at that moment where it was like, you have to make a choice or the choice will be taken away. And actually, I had a weekend with some friends who were from a writing retreat that I went to in 2004. And they were sort of friends who knew me well enough to be allowed to ask, but did not, like, knew me not well enough that they did not know the answer to the question of, well, geez, you're married, you live in a lovely little town with a cute school around the corner, you live in a little house, you know, a nice house, you're not a war correspondent, so why do you not have kids? And, you know, they would have been happy with any answer from, I don't feel like it, or I don't know, kids are a big mess, or whatever I came up with, they didn't care, they weren't invested. And it was at that sort of reunion, every time I talked about it, I had to say to them, stop asking me because I'm going to start crying. And that was when I realized to myself, oh, you're not being honest about your feelings with you. So you need to get on the same page with yourself, like now, and make a decision. And so, spoiler alert, I had a child. And that was about 8 years ago. True to form, having a child made the writing life very complicated. And I was kind of prepared to not care anymore. I think that was one of my fears was, is it going to be so hard that I'm not going to give up, but not able to continue with the struggle, just to feel like it's just easier to not have that pull. And I went from not having a literary agent before my daughter was born to maybe she was about 6 months old or so when, it's a long story, I ended up with a literary agent. And he's the one that said to me, okay, if you go back and revise your first novel, I'll try to submit it. And that kind of was my first writing assignment. I feel like that gave me the incentive to, like, you know, get up in the baby morning and find the time and, you know, say to my husband, you take the baby, I'm going to go write. You put her to bed, I'm going to Panera. And, you know, and there was that pull from outside saying there's a due date. Somebody's waiting for it. Somebody's looking for it. And so that was like the transition moment. And then she went to preschool and there was a little bit more time. And just to back up one moment, the other piece of it is that just with the economics of our family, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to not have a paying job. And I got my first paycheck for writing just a couple months ago. So, you know, until just very recently, I was an unpaid author. And then that's a tension as well. And that took, that means that the economic pull on your family is significant because you're investing your hours of your life to do this thing that means the world to you, but it's not bringing any money to the family. And that makes you feel kind of like you need to sneak around behind everybody's back and do it at a time when it's not taking away from the house, the dog, family time, taking, you know, feeding everybody, going to the grocery store, and working a paid job that has no relationship with the project. And there have been wonderful breaks. I've actually gotten laid off from a couple of jobs and just kind of announced, hey, I've been fired. I'm writing this summer. And it was joyful, let me tell you. But now I'm in a really nice phase where I love my day job, but it is time consuming. And my daughter's older, so she's a little more independent. She has things like, you know, her own activities and her own pieces of time, which kind of frees me up a little bit. And I'm still finding that it's just hard to carve out those spaces, those pieces of time that are really just for me. because writing at the end of the day for me is about, it's about like putting myself in a bucket and lowering myself into a deep well and like gathering up what's at the bottom of the well, bringing it to the top, into the light, squeezing it through this sieve that is the shape of a story, and somehow making sense of it so that it's like legible to people who are not me. And I have to have that time knowing that nobody's going to start screaming at me because they can't find their shoes. I have to be assured that is my sort of sacred space. And I can't do that if there's some possibility that someone's going to come over and start talking to me about where we're going on summer vacation, or if somebody's going to start telling me something about our day-to-day lives. You can't be here now talking about that because my brain is down in the well, and I can't participate. And so it's easier for me, it's healthier for my whole family, really, if I just make sure that that happens separately, which means that there's less of that time because of the other time constraints. So as a result, I mean, there's a tension. And when I'm working really hard on something, it's tough. I mean, it's painful because, you know, it's like a boyfriend. It's like a college boyfriend. Or you just like want to be together, but, oh, you just can't for whatever reason. Oh, it's so hard. So, but you know what? At the end of the day, I feel really, really grateful to have not just one thing that's super important in my life, but two. And at the end of the day, I feel like my daughter is, surprise, surprise, a super creative person. She's actually very word focused and drawing, like artwork focused. And so I see her kind of budding into this artist. I don't know if it'll stick or not. But I feel like I'm giving her the picture of a mom who sits down and does it. And there's no publisher yelling at me, and there's no, you know, anybody else. Nobody cares. Like, really, aside from you guys, nobody out in the world is saying to me, like, you've got to meet this deadline. You have to fulfill these obligations. It's between me and myself. And I feel like I'm giving her that model of an artist who sits down every morning at 5 in the morning and works at it until it's time to make breakfast. And I feel grateful for that opportunity, and I feel really proud to be a part of that journey. That was my 10 minutes.
Thank you, Maggie.
Well, my name is Maggie Van Galen. I am a children's book author of the series, The Kino and Ernest, The Adventures of Kino and Ernest. There's 3 books in the series. And when I was thinking about Elizabeth's proposal for us to come here and talk about writing, publishing, and mothering, which I was almost late because of the mothering piece tonight, I tried to figure out like how I would form my talk. And so I've been as I call it, a closet writer my whole life. I've written as younger years, I wrote poetry. I wrote letters to myself to sort of work my way through the teenage angst. I went to Michigan State University as a journalism major. And as Elizabeth said earlier, life sort of takes you in its own direction with the need to put food on the table and care for your family and do whatnot. So I ended up in sales and marketing because that's really related to writing. And that's where I spent the majority of my 20s and 30s. And then I had a kid. And my kids are older. I have a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old. And so how I decided to sort of structure my talk tonight was how I came up with the idea of The Adventures of Kino and Ernest. And I have to give my dad credit, actually, because When I was a little girl, my dad used to tell me bedtime stories about Kino and Ernest. Kino's this crazy monkey. Ernest is this very wise elephant. Kino's always in trouble. Ernest is always getting him out. And I remember there being like 7 different adventures that Kino and Ernest would go on. I remember there being a lot of action adventure. There was no moral to any story. It was all, you know, it was all just fun and games. So, but unfortunately, my dad never wrote them down. He was a fantastic storyteller and raconteur, and he would transport me anywhere his stories were told. And but he never wrote any of them down, and he passed away about 25 years ago. So when my oldest son was born, Luke, I started making up my own adventures around Kino and Ernest because I could remember the characters perfectly. I was talking with somebody in the audience earlier that said that they could picture their characters. I do stick figures marvelously, but I'm not an illustrator. But I could picture Kino and Ernest, but I couldn't remember the bits of the story. So I started making up my own adventures, and I would tell him the stories. And when he got to be about in preschool, he came to me and he said, "Mom, they're doing this, you know, parent, bring your parent into school day and tell us what you do." And, you know, it's firefighters and doctors and professionals. And he's like, "You're a really good storyteller. You should come in and do that." And, oh, the stake went through the heart. I was like, "Of course I'll come in." So I came in and told the story, because that's what I did as a job. And the teacher came to me and said, and my stories, I did have morals in my stories. It wasn't all action adventure, because I now had somebody that I needed to direct morally, right? I had a small person, and actually now I had 2 small people. And that's a whole nother take on writing, when you have not just providing for your family, as Elizabeth said, because writing surely falls into the starving artist category, but the responsibility you have to show, in children's book sense, to show the morals that can guide your own children. And those are the morals that I chose for the 3 books are actually things that happened in my kids' lives as they got older. So in the first story, Kino learns about following family rules and about friendship. In the second story, Kino learns about that if you take something without asking, even if you think it's a trade, it's still stealing. And in the 3rd book, which in today's day and age, I think is probably, I could read this to just about any age group, is that staying true to yourself and not changing who you are, what you look like, or how you talk, just to be liked by somebody else, is so important and can end you up in a world of trouble. And so now my kids are 16 and 14. It's hard to get Kino and Ernest to go with the morals that we're dealing with these days. You know, Kino's not really ready for dating, and so mothering has sort of formed my writing. It's formed my stories. I always tell people I'm a storyteller before I am an author, because I am. And as much as I love to write, the stories in my head, they have to be formulated before they go onto paper. And the mothering aspect truly has formed my writing. And now that my kids are older, I am faced with a new challenge, in the sense that I still love to write and I still would like to write. I have a lot of stories in my head, but they're not related. Well, they are kind of related to my children, in the sense that they're my life story, my life lessons that I learned growing up, but they're certainly not for the younger audience. So they would be sort of an adult-based or young adult-based book with lessons as well. But I write in short bursts. I'm a children's book author. I'm a journalist for the local newspaper. So this is like a whole new learning experience for me, because now I need to learn how to write chapters and long. I wrote what I thought was a really long piece, and people were like, "Where's the rest?" So it's almost like going back to school and learning again. And I've been fortunate enough to have a writers group that I belong to, and they are all really good at writing chapter books. So I've been pulling from them as well. The other piece about being a mother and writing, it's funny because I had a conversation with a woman the other day, and she said, "So is all you do write?" And I said, "Well, no, you know, what all do I do?" And so I do write, yes, that's one of the things I do, and that's sort of my title, if you will, as I'm an author and a writer. But I did a little resume piece for myself when she asked me that. I'm like, okay, so if I had to fill out a resume to get like a day job today, what would I call myself in the mothering piece of the world? So I came up with CMO. I'm the chief mom officer. So I'm in charge of all taxi service, all household duties, financial, cleaning, feeding, groceries, head cheerleader. You know, I'm the therapist, and I'm the client occasionally as well. I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty good. Like, I kind of encompass everything. Oh yes, and I write as well. So, and I do write for the local paper, so that sort of supports my writing habit of the other piece. But I think being a parent, not just a mother, but being a parent can truly shapes your life. You know, I think we can all agree. It shapes who you are. It changes who you are. As soon as you have somebody else that's responsible, that you're responsible to, it truly shapes and changes who you are and how you go about your everyday life, whether that's writing or anything else, I think. And I wouldn't change it for the world, because, you know, as much as I sometimes wish that I was in a different world with teenagers, I wouldn't change it for the world. They're the light of my life, and it's Mother's Day is my favorite holiday every year, because it reminds me of how I got to be there. And that's my spiel.
Thank you.
Harriet?
So my name's Harriet Moore. I write under the pen name H.R. Moore, and so far I've self-published 4 books. So the first 3 are a fantasy trilogy called the Relic Trilogy, and they're kind of a cross between The Hunger Games and Twilight. So there's lots of action, lots of plot, but there's also quite a lot of romance. And then I recently published a new book called In the Gleaming Light, which is a speculative fiction piece set 30 years in the future, and talks about automation and robots and what happens when they steal our jobs. So it's kind of book club fiction. It's, you know, there's a lot of plot, but it's also, there's some kind of real stuff going on beneath it. When I started my writing journey, I was living in New York for 3 months with work. So I was there on a kind of secondment, and I had so much time. I didn't really know what to do with myself. You know, I went to work during the week, and other than that, I had no friends, I had no family, I had no commitments. I was like, I can go to the gym, I can eat nice food, and I can write a book. This is great. I've always wanted to write a book. I've always wanted to see if, you know, something I could do. And I was like, well, this is it. It's now or never. You know, I'm never going to have this much time again. So I gave it a go. And then 3 months later, I obviously hadn't finished the book, but I returned to the UK. I was recently married. We had an apartment that needed renovating. So, you know, I had less time. But even so, I could roll out of bed at 9:30 on a Saturday and kind of congratulate myself for not having had too long a lie-in. And I could spend the whole day, you know, writing, creating a website, doing whatever it was that I needed to do, and get to the end of the day with my relationship with my husband untested, because, you know, he hadn't had to look after the children all day by himself. And, you know, then fast forward to now, where we are, where my family is now, and, you know, I've got 2 children who are 2 and 4, mm-hmm. and I have no time at all to do anything. So, you know, weekends are really family time. After they go to bed at about 7:30 in the evening is for eating chocolate and watching Game of Thrones, because I'm not really capable of doing anything else other than that. You know, and so I have nap time. So luckily my younger daughter, who's 2, still has a decent nap of about 2 hours after lunch. So that's fine, she's kind of taken care of. And I've done some crazy things to be home in time for nap time, like leaving play dates early, refusing lunches, keeping my children awake in the car, just so I am home, so she can go in the cot, whichever one was napping. And so now I am, as my 2-year-old naps, and my 4-year-old, I encourage to have some independent playtime, which I do with varying degrees of success, and usually involves quite a lot of bribery, normally television-related bribery. Like, if you go and play for an hour by yourself, then you can have a little bit of television before your sister wakes up. I mean, clearly this is not—it's not an exact science, and and it doesn't usually work all that well. But unlike Elizabeth, I don't have the discipline to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to write.
Amen.
So, and as I've already established, after bedtime is off the cards. So really, this is my time, and you know, and it's a good thing and a bad thing in that. It's a bad thing in that I'd love to have more time, but it's a good thing in that it gets me focused around nap time. So if I don't sit down and do some writing-related stuff at that point, it is not happening. So I make a cup of tea, I placated my daughter, I sit down with my laptop, and then I think, think, what do I do? You know, because anyone that's written and self-published anything knows it's not really about writing. That's the, you know, the fun, nice, easy bit that you do, which is all very pleasant. And then you have to do the serious stuff of selling the books. And there's a world of stuff that you can do to sell the books, from, you know, creating social media following to Amazon ads to paying someone else to do it for you. Never do that, it doesn't work. And so you've got this list of stuff, and I used to sit down on my computer and think, okay, this is the time, I'm going to do some book stuff, and I think, I don't know where to start. And they're like, okay, well, what's the priority? Okay, well, I'm a self-published author, so that means I want to sell books, surely. So the thing that's going to sell the most books, that's what I should do. I was like, well, I don't really know what sells the most books. So I should Google it. That's what I should do. And so obviously you Google it. And I mean, being a self-published author is a bit like being part of the gold rush in California. So because Amazon has opened up this world of gold, and there are all these prospectors who are, you know, the self-published authors who are merrily writing their stuff and putting it out on the internet and hoping to strike gold. But those authors don't, you know, for the most part, make absolutely no money whatsoever. In fact, it's like a negative investment for most people, I think. And very much like in the gold rush, the people that make money are those that sell kind of ancillary services. So, you know, people who sell spades or groceries or provide brothels or whatever it was. You know, and now it's a case of people who, you know, sell, who do editing services or provide book cover art, or people who provide marketing services. So when you Google it, so I'm sitting there at nap time and I'm like, I'll Google it. And what you get is all of these people who are these kind of marketing experts, and they're selling you their methodology. They're like, you know what you need to do? You need to build a newsletter list. That's what you need to do. Then you're going to become a bestseller, because every person on that newsletter is going to buy your books. It's a load of rubbish. I mean, I'm sure it works for some people, but it's never worked for me. You know, or someone else is saying, what you need to do is have a social media following, because that's what it was today. It's all the rage. Social media, that's what you need to do. Fine. Okay. So what I used to do is I used to go, okay, well, there's all this stuff. What I should do is I should try everything and then kind of see what works. And I'm sure whatever like fits best for my books, I'll do that thing, and then I'll go deep on that one thing. And so you end up, you know, doing a bit of building a social media platform, or doing a bit of building a newsletter list, and then you go, oh, it's a bit hard. It's not really showing me results. Obviously, this one's not for me. Let's move on to the next one. And you know, you do that a few times, and then you realise it's not really working. So then you realise that you should do something else. And actually, what I've over the last year, my sister and I have been working together on building an Instagram platform, so Bookstagram. Entirely useless. One of the things I've learned, entirely useless, is actually selling any books. However, we've been quite successful. So, I mean, in terms of follower numbers. So we've got almost 10,000 followers on Instagram, which is, I mean, it's great. It doesn't sell any books, so it's kind of pointless. but, you know, I mean, I'm kind of a big deal in the social media world. I'm not at all. But what I've learned is that you really have to put in the effort day in, day out. You have to post, you have to like, you have to follow, you have to comment, you have to go and take photographs to put on Instagram. You know, it's a lot of work. And that's been two people for almost an entire year to get to 10,000 followers and not sell any books. But it's been very valuable, because what I've realised is actually anything that you do, you can't kind of scattergun it. You have to really go deep on the one thing and commit 6 months or a year or whatever to finding out if it's going to work. And actually, it's kind of soul-destroying as an author when it doesn't work, but also you do learn that's what you have to do to get any kind of traction. I can't remember what I was going to say next.
That's what we call mummy brain.
Yes, mothers. Yes, that's the thing. That's what we were talking about. So I go back to... So what I used to do was go, right, scattergun approach, brilliant. That didn't work. So what I now have realised is that my priority of selling books isn't actually have anything to do with my motivation of why I got into selling, or why I got into writing books in the first place. So why I got into writing books, because I love books, I wanted to see if I could do it, I love stories, you know, and I then self-published because I wanted to get some validation and some feedback so I could improve. So when I sat down at my computer, I was like, well, my priority should be selling more books. Actually, that has nothing to do with fulfilling the motivation of why I was doing it in the first place. So actually, my motivation, if you could do anything in line with my motivation, I should sit at my computer and I should write more books. And that's what I enjoy, that's what I like doing. And I should then share it with enough people that I get enough feedback so that I can improve. So, you know, I've realised that's what I like doing, that's what I should be doing, and I think as a mother with very little time, I think that's, you know, people should really think about what is my motivation, why am I doing this, and kind of stay true to that. And also, you know, the reality of being a self-published author is it is all about sales, and, you know, if you want to make money out of it, it's all about sales. And if I want to make money out of something, if anyone wants to make money out of something, I think you really should stick to whatever your skills are. And you know, my skills are, I'm really organized, I can get stuff done, you know, I like leading teams, I like working with teams, I like implementing stuff, I like arguing in board meetings, you know, I love that kind of stuff. And you know, so if I want to make money out of anything, that's where I should be spending my time. The reason I love writing is because I love having a creative outlet, and I love, you know, having creative control over something, and I love getting that kind of validation from readers that it's good. So I think anyone that is in the writing world needs to think about their motivations, need to think about, are you a salesperson? And if you're not a salesperson, think about what you want to get out of self-publishing. And really, as a mother with very limited time, I think make sure that you're not sort of amping up the anxiety trying to do something that isn't in line with your motivation of why you're doing it in the first place. So that was my turn.
I'm going to open it up for questions and comments. And I ask that you, if you would like to direct a question at one of the authors, in addition to that author answering, I would like each of the authors to respond to every question, because then we get different perspectives.
I'm going to let Maggie run show. I mean, Elizabeth.
Maggie wanted Maggie.
Yes, you're on the front.
You were, all three of you were fabulous. Fabulous. And I must tell you, I don't have kids. And but everything that each of you said, I have a cat and a husband. I should say husband and a cat. But everything that you said was very relatable, and it was awesome. Thank you very much. And my first question was going to be on marketing, and here you did a fabulous job expressing on the marketing thing. So Elizabeth and Maggie, if you don't mind to share a little bit of your marketing focus. And Harry, if there's anything that you can think of at the end to share, and that would be wonderful.
So you're looking at the extent of my marketing. So I have written 4 novels, and I had a literary agent try to sell, or I'm working on the 4th, tried to sell 1, 2, 3. Long story short, I thought I was going to do self-publishing because he couldn't sell anything, and then this past January, he just sold it. So I've received a check, a miracle of miracles, but I haven't even heard from the publisher yet in terms of any more edits. So long story short, I don't have anything to market at this moment. And I haven't really done much. My marketing, when I thought I was self-publishing, I did start to put down the tracks for a marketing plan. And that started with networking. And I reached out to a local children's author who lives in my town, and it was Maggie. And I invited her out for, I don't know, something at our local restaurant. Who knew what she did? And it was like a bottle of wine. Okay, let's share a bottle of wine. And I just decided I have to adopt her for the rest of my life. And so that's in progress. She put me in so many different directions. I felt like I needed to really connect with writers groups to find out what's effective. And I had already found Writers Night Out with the the New Hampshire Writers Project as the Writers Nights Out. And I have been going to the one in Portsmouth, and that's where I found Harriet, who is also awesome. So I guess my biggest so far writing lesson, my marketing lesson, is find groups of writers. And I'm an introvert. I talked about this extensively at my last podcast. I'm an introvert, and it's kind of difficult for me to put myself out there in groups of people, but I really made myself do it. And I think that's absolutely the number one thing you have to do. And you're going to find the people that you connect with, and you're going to find the Carters, and you're going to find Maggie, and you're going to find Harriet, and then you're going to find some other people who maybe don't have so much of a connection. But you know what? Scoop those people up too. Because when you're ready to market, when you're ready to get your book out there, these are all part of your community. And they're going to publish their books, and you're going to put out the word about their books. And when you get your stuff out there, they're going to do the same for you. They're going to show up at your book party, and they're going to post your pictures on Facebook, just like you're going to do for them. And it's incredibly satisfying. It's pretty straightforward, easy, and even if it sort of misses the mark in terms of any kind of immediate payback, it lays a groundwork for a bigger plan, and you make friends, and it's like low cost, high win all around. So that's my marketing plan to date.
So I published my first book in 2011. And I went with an indie publisher at the time, Outskirts Press, out of Colorado. And I chose them for 2 reasons. One, because I had no idea what I was doing, and they promised to guide me perfectly down the gold, as you mentioned, the golden path of success. The second reason was, which if I think I remember you telling me you've self-published a number of books, is that Outskirts Press allowed me to keep my copyright, which was really important. And to any budding authors out there, make sure that you maintain your copyright. So if you do get picked up by Penguin Books or Simon & Schuster or whoever, you can take your book with you. So that is That is, I think, the number one lesson that I learned. The second thing, which I thought was really interesting, is that in this guided path to success that Outskirts promised, it was a bucket list, like you were saying, of expertise, right? So for $500, they would do this, and for $400, they would do this, and all I had to do was add it to the cart and press go. And I would become, you know, the world's golden children's author. To quote Harriet, that's a load of rubbish. There are thousands of books, hundreds of thousands of books. And I try, like Harriet said, I've tried everything. I've been to, you know, the number one children's book trade show in Italy. I didn't personally go, unfortunately, because that would have made it way more worth the money. But my books went. They said they had a great time. But we didn't sell any books. And literally, I asked the marketing specialist, so what else do you need? And she said, you just sit back and take orders. Those were her words. Sit back. I was like, I can do that. That is awesome. This is totally worth it. And then the phone never rang. There were no orders. So I've learned that there are a few things specific to what I do, to the children's world, that financially as a business do work for me. So schools are my number one market. I love going into schools. It's the most fun, first of all, and that's the best part about being a children's author is getting to hang out with kids that don't talk back to you, I should say, on the mothering aspect. But it's a captured audience. I get paid for it. They take book order forms. They do order books. They pay for the books. So that is by far my... The advice extended out to any type of any genre of writing is to find that one sort of pearl, if you will. And then the other sort of piece of wisdom that I will expand on you based on my own experience is that marketing is like a drop in a pond. So if you drop it, you get this ripple effect. So start in your own pond. Start where you live. Start with your friends and your family. When I first launched Kino in Earnest, or when I first published Kino in Earnest, I sent an email out to every person I knew under the sun. I said, you may or may not have known that I write books, but I wrote a book. And a local jeweler in our town offered to host, she has a beautiful old building, and she offered to host a book signing. I had no idea what that meant, but I was like, sure, you know, and I sold hundreds of books.
That's kind of unusual, I think.
But it was all friends.
Oh, okay, fine.
It was everybody. Like,
you've got loads of friends.
See, that's the benefit of being a mother, is it all your kids' friends, right? Yeah.
Yes.
It's all your kids' friends.
And the PTA.
And the
brownies. If you're sending kids' books, I feel like that's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah, but like a mom's night out.
Yeah.
Those kind of books. But
to get in the school system.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I'm not sure they'd like my books that much. Anyway, sorry.
So all I'm saying is start with the ponds that you know and then drop in. So I fortunately have two ponds because I'm originally from Michigan. So I dropped into my local pond back there and I dropped in here. And it slowly starts to ripple out. It's not a wave, don't get me wrong. There's no white caps or anything. It's a slow ripple. And it really is all up to you. So it's how much you want to put into it. I said to somebody earlier, if it happens that I become the next J.K. Rowling, that would be awesome. But that was not the intent of me publishing my book. My intent was to leave a legacy for my kids on paper that my father had not been able to do for me. And so I'm success, right? I've reached the pinnacle of what I set out to do. So anything above and beyond that is awesome to me and is kind of, you know, like frosting on the cake. And I'll continue to do it as long as I love it. So I am still loving it. So that's what I'm doing. That's my marketing spiel.
Did you have anything extra in addition here?
I think the only thing I'd add is, I think I read somewhere, or this may be a myth, but you know, someone has to see something kind of 7 times before, before they actually convert to a sale. And I think that is the good thing about social media if you do start building a following. So, you know, or anything, if you can put your book out there in front of people enough times that they start to see it as a kind of legitimate thing, or they start to notice it, I think that that's definitely helpful. And I've definitely started to see that on Instagram. So, you know, people who I don't know have started talking about, you know, have left a comment on one of my photos to say, oh, this is interesting, I might read it. But again, you know, you take 10,000 followers and you whittle that down to the number of people who've, you know, bothered to actually really look at it 7 times and engage with it, and then you're looking at quite a small pool. And also I think getting people to review your books is also really important, and to get the both, you know, if you get them to put the review on social media for their followers, brilliant. But also just having more reviews on Amazon and Goodreads, and, you know, just getting them to be a bit more of a legitimate entity in their own right, I think.
It also bumps you up in the search results.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So,
Yes?
I find this sometimes is a common thing in my own writing as a dad, but do you ladies find that your kids randomly pop up in your writing as alternate characters, or aspects of their characters bleed into your writing?
Not for me. I'm trying to think if I even have an analogous. Oh, well, not my daughter per se. But the thing I'm working on right now is a Cinderella retelling. So, okay, she's not in there, but it's so clearly influenced by, you know, reading fairy tales with your daughter and seeing her have her princess fantasies, and feeling like you want to correct them, you know, like you want to rewrite some of the things in the Disney, you know, the neon pink and the candy coated and the fruity flavors, and put something that feels more more genuine and more, you know, more real, especially in the way that fairy tales, the original fairy tales, had had elements of, you know, very frightening elements in them from real life. And you kind of feel like Disney whitewashed that so that the kids don't get, I mean, they kind of work out their fears through the original fairy tales, which some of which are really gruesome. I mean, really, really horrific. Like, we must not share these with children because they will give them nightmares. But, you know, so I would say that's as close as I personally come to her popping up. Related themes.
I definitely have a Kino and an Ernest living in my house. So, yes. Short answer. Yes.
I think short answer for me is no, although there are other people who, you know, definitely take inspiration from kind of other people I know, or even like the way people talk or the way people say things. Sometimes I find just sort of coming out as I'm sitting at the keyboard.
Do you find, are you worried about the way they come out? Like, do you kind of have pretend conversations and then say like, oh, this is a little too close to home? Or?
No, I find it's actually therapeutic and rejuvenates life into a piece of writing I'm working on.
Interesting.
That's great.
More questions? Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, I want to say thank you that when my children were smaller, I wished that this was a topic of discussion. Mm-hmm. I felt my first contract for a book was 9 months before my second child was born. Wow. And I didn't make the deadline. Wow. It did get published, but I had to really
That would be stressful.
But it was like nobody mentioned parenting at all, mother or father, and and writing. You know, you were supposed to just be a writer.
Right.
It was just, you know, whatever.
Yeah, right.
And my children are now, they're older than any of yours. They're 35 and 40. So I've seen my children while I've written books throughout my time. But the question I had was about the impact of your writing or being creative on your kids. How have you seen that? I mean, for me, actually, the one thing is my children constantly told me, we don't want to see ourselves in your book. We do not want to see ourselves. As soon as they could speak. Because they were both introverts. So the thought that somebody would think that somebody... But the other part was openness to creativity that I experienced. And neither of them makes much money. But both of them are creative. But it varied during the years, and I was just wondering how you, to have a parent who does that kind of odd work, that odd creative thing that sometimes people like and some people don't, and sometimes people... I can remember going with my kids to like a book signing and nobody coming. Yeah. I mean, you know, nobody coming to that Barnes & Noble just sell that book, and my kids looking at me like, so...
You were in Barnes & Noble, though. I mean, that's pretty good
right?
going.
Well, you could spin that marketing-wise, no problem.
Yeah. If you ask them, they will. No, but so how have you found that your kids respond to that kind of work?
I'd say it's my number one interruption during nap time would be my four-year-old saying, "Mummy, I'm writing a book." And how do you spell, you know, endless numbers of words? Or I want to type on the computer. So I'm going, you know, she'll be like, I'm just, and then she'll go and take a book and one of her books, or actually more like a stack of her books. She's ambitious. And she'll, you know, she'll go to the computer and she'll open them and she'll start copying the words from her books onto the computer because, you know, she finds it kind of fascinating. She loves reading. She loves being read to. She's very theatrical. She's definitely not an introvert, my older one. And, you know, she loves it. She loves the creativity. She, you know, she will make me sit there and she'll dictate a story to me that I have to, you know, to, I mean, they're not overly well formed or thought through at the age of four. You wouldn't expect that. But, you know, she's definitely really engaged. She loves it. But then she's, you know, she's like that with everything, and she loves singing and dancing and acting, and I think it's just for her it's a kind of extension of that really. I've never taken her to a book signing. If I've done a book signing, because I know that nobody would turn up, so it's true, it's so true. You do, okay, great, let's do it. You can come to my house, we'll have it there.
Awesome.
I'm done, so over to you.
Yes, so I have two boys, and I'm always amazed that the same gene pool can create such different creatures. One of them is, the younger one is definitely by far my creative child. And if you looked up firstborn son in the dictionary, there would be a picture of my firstborn son. He fits all of the medical definitions of, you know, he's a linear thinker and he lives in the box and not a rule breaker, and he is all of those definitions. However, he loves to read. I think that I'm not sure it has to do with me being a writer so much. Like, when they were younger, they thought it was pretty cool that I would come into their classrooms. Now I think they'd be horrified if I came into their classrooms. I think it has more to do with doing something that you love than it has to do with what that is. And I really push that on my kids to... I sign every book with Always Follow Your Dreams, because even though, as Elizabeth said, life will take you down different roads, at the end of the day, you always keep in mind what it is that you want to do. And if you're doing something that you love, that will rub off on your kids, and it help them to do what they love to do. So be it writing or otherwise, I think that's how it's affected our family anyway.
So I tell you, I don't know that my daughter understood what it meant that I was a writer or mommy's writing a book or any of it until Maggie came and read to our brownies. And actually, my daughter's in second grade, 8 years old, or almost eight, and Maggie came and led them in a writing workshop, which I remember sort of we emailed about what she was going to do with them. And she was like, I'll bring them through some writing exercises. And I was thinking, well, we'll see how that works out. But they were totally into it. But that's like a side. And if anybody's listening to this podcast, can I just say it? Maggie does an awesome presentation with kids. She's absolutely outstanding. But Maggie said something like to my daughter, like, I'm a writer like your mom. And I feel like the whole group kind of turned and looked at me and like, you're a writer? Yes. Like, as we've said many times, yes, it's all true. And it was like, oh, you write books. Right. Well, they're just not books yet. So I feel like she's kind of absorbed it now, especially, since getting the book contract. I think she's kind of getting the idea that just there are lots of steps to this. And, her friend got a kit for Christmas where you write a book and then you send it to the publisher and they send back your book with the pictures. And it's all, I think she kind of thought it would be like that, but she's figuring out that it's a little more complicated. She's a naturally creative person, and she turns out that she's also she does think in words. And she's very comfortable sitting down and writing. And I don't think that has anything to do with me. I think that's just what she comes up with on her own. And as she gets older and learning what she's learning in school about, about writing and everything, I think she's just absorbing it on her own. If anything, she probably would tell you that she's a better writer. She's like, she's got this under control, and I don't know what mom's problem is. But I feel like as she gets older, and there is the lesson of follow your dreams and stick with what you love. Don't give up on it, because the lessons of life will come at you. When you get out there and you have your first apartment and you realize what a budget is and what paying rent is and how you divide up your time, if you get lucky enough to get some kind of a paid gig that is what you love, hallelujah, enjoy every minute. But if you're somebody who has to divide your time between what you're paid for and what you love, you kind of just gotta slice and dice. And I feel like she's had this example of somebody who's been committed and who foregoes other things, because of that. And I think she'll carry that with her. I'm hoping she does. So, yeah. Anybody else?
Great, I enjoyed each of you, so thank you, very engaging. I'm just wondering if you would put some more language around this question. How would you define success? And you can take that to mothering or writing or both.
Oh my gosh.
So I'll leave you.
Rock, paper, scissors for good. I'll
go. So I think that's an impossible question around mothering. I think, there is no such thing as mothering success, and there's no such thing as, well, maybe there is, as unmothering success, I don't know. I think for me, I'm now going to contradict myself and tell you what I think my mothering success would be. Would be really my kids being happy and following things that they're passionate about and that they love doing. as has been kind of, you know, said by these guys too. But equally, you know, being well-rounded people who understand the need for a paycheck, you know, I think that's also healthy.
Yes.
And I think in terms of writing success, you know, it's something I definitely kind of battled with, and because I'm quite a success/results-driven person, and everything else that I've done aside from writing books, you know, it's a much more obvious goal or thing you're trying to achieve, or is usually more easily quantifiable what success is. And I think that's why I went so, earlier on when I was writing, I went so much more down the kind of, I need to sell books, that's, I'm a self-published author, therefore I need to sell books. And what I've come to realise is that, as I sort of said earlier, you know, that's not really why I'm doing this. So success for me really is to have, you know, to write books that are engaging to people, so that when people read them, they, you know, they enjoy them, that they're as good as things that you can buy, you know, out there on the shelves in Barnes and Noble, and that I have a creative outlet where I can create this thing that I can then send out into the world, which is an enjoyable and creative and wonderful process, for me, especially, you know, amongst the craziness of being a mother.
Success as a writer and a mother, or just general success. I think success as a mother or a parent in that respect is so individual to people, and it's so different at every age. You know, when they're first born, you're successful. If they make it through the night, you're just like, oh, or that you make it through the night. You're successful if you get more than 3 hours of sleep consecutively. And then as they get older, you know, it's the just because they get older and they get more independent doesn't mean that there's any less questions or issues or things. They just get bigger and you hear about them later rather than beforehand. And they're suddenly driving 3,000-pound vehicles down the road with you next to them. So success as a parent, I mean, I totally agree with what Harriet said. You want to see them healthy and happy and, you know, whatever path they choose. As far as writing goes, I think that if you're a writer and that's what you love to do, I'm fortunate in that my husband's job allows me to be a stay-at-home mom, and I write for the newspaper, and I write for myself. So I'm very fortunate in that respect. I've been in the corporate world, I've climbed the corporate ladder, I really, really don't like it. I always get in trouble because I have a big mouth. You may have noticed. You know, I know I can do it, but I don't want to do it, so I'm quite happy to be where I am. So I kind of consider myself successful, because my mantra has always been, even as a young person, always follow your dreams. And I am doing that, and I'm living it, and I love it. Can you ride my rides at Disney? No.
Not yet.
So, yeah, I mean, from a writing perspective, I'm quite happy with where I am right now. So, thank you.
Yay. You know, my first thought when you said success as a mother, they're not in jail. They're not in jail. You know, or if they are there, I mean, hopefully they'll learn their lesson. I guess I kind of feel like... Yeah, there's nothing else you can ask for. You know, healthy and happy and working on the stuff. There's always stuff. We have our stuff that we're working on personally, and they have their stuff. And, you know, the two of us in our relationship have our stuff. And it's a constant conversation. And she's changing as a person, and I'm changing as a person. And so the conversation is constantly changing, but we're in conversation. I call that success. I'm, you know, and it's going to change. All I ever think about recently, I heard an interview, somebody reminded me that, hey, if you love what's going on, it's going to change. If you don't love what's going on, it's going to change. And there's almost nothing else about parenthood as shocking as how fast it happens, even when you're in the middle of it with this tiny little infant, and you're looking at them and thinking, how long before you, like, use the toilet, you know, suddenly they're in 10th grade. You know, I mean, it just is almost, it's mind-boggling how it happens. And people tell you it's happening, and you don't believe them. And then it happens, and you're like, oh, I get it. A success as a writer, you know, I feel like I really, really remember a time when I just wanted to, like, sit down and get lost in a narrative that I was focusing on. And I wanted to find that story, and I wanted to see if I could do it, see if I could sit with a story from the beginning to the end, and see if I could put it in words. And you know, remember somebody saying, I know you want to get published, but what are your goals? And I was thinking, I just want to, like, get to the words the end in the draft. And as it happens, that's not the end. It's like, now try, like, 10 more rewritings of that 500-page tome. And somewhere in there you kind of get to where, all right, I've fulfilled my obligation to this story and I'm ready to move on to the next one. I think success is doing it, because again, you're learning. Like, every single thing you do is the process is teaching you about the process.
Yep.
And you're staying in that conversation. Who was it? Oh, it was Elizabeth Gilbert in Big Magic, which is a really lovely book about the artistic life. And she told this story about some author, and I don't remember who it was, but some guy went to his reading. And the guy stood up in the audience and he said, you know, I'm really mad at you because you and I are the same age and you're a super successful author. And I write books and I work really hard and I'm not having any success. And don't tell me I just need to keep with it and at some point I'll break through, because I will scream at you. And the guy said, okay, I'm not going to tell you that. Here's my advice. Give it up. Take a break. Go start a garden. Go join a club. Go yachting. Go drinking. Just go do something else. And if you forget about it and you're really happy with whatever you're doing, then live your life. And if you feel like, gosh, I really miss doing that, I really miss spending my time that way, then come on back, and guess what? You might have to, like, stick with it and be patient with the process, and that's okay. I kind of feel like if you're putting your butt in that chair every day and you're looking at the screen and you're working it out and you're answering the questions for yourself and you're in progress, I don't know. Is there anything more you can ask of the world? I mean, seems okay to me. Yes, sir.
Well, you guys have been a retrospective inspiration to me. It skipped a generation in my family. My granddaughter is writing extensively and also doing a lot of art. She's just turned 11.
Fantastic.
And I like to think that what I do is model some of that. But it's just interesting to me that she also is into music and she's a Broadway girl. But it really is the thing that I think she got was that if you love something, you just do it. There's no question about it. So we will do art for a day. There's a place in Dover, Paint for Fun, that we go to when she comes to visit. Sometimes we'll do art together, but sometimes she'll do art and I'll write. And I give the poems to the lady that runs the place. So my granddaughter's aware that that's something that has utility, interpersonal utility, as well as creativity. And I think that's just part of her life. But the only thing that saved me when my daughter was young, my granddaughter's age, Because I had a boss that let me write poetry at work. Even though it was a technical scientific place, he didn't know what to do with me. So if I wrote occasional poems for people's birthdays and that sort of thing, he allowed that. So it was just serendipity, but it just seems to me that if you're really in love with what you're passionate about, somehow, in the great scheme of things, people will recognize that and honor it. And I'm really eternally grateful to people who have done that for me in situations that were not particularly conducive to artistic generation. So I don't know if you guys have experienced that.
Well, one thing I would say, and I actually did it for Elizabeth's Brownie Troupe, is give your granddaughter the poem and ask her to draw a picture for your words.
Yeah,
it's a great exercise, and it's fun. And have her draw or write something and have you draw it, too. Great exercise for kids. Really gets their minds thinking. So thank you for sharing. That was awesome. That was awesome. I don't have grandchildren yet, thankfully.
Wait for it.
Can I wait a while?
I know,
please?
Wait a while. Wait a while.
Just a little while.
I will say that I had this romantic notion before I published a book of being an author meant sitting by the fireplace, wrapped up in a cozy blanket, drinking a lovely glass of tea or wine or whatever, and just writing. It's been, 8 years now? That's never happened. And I'm not sure if that ever will, but that would be my ultimate success, was to be able, I'm not even sure I could sit in a chair for that long.
There's also that thing, isn't there, like when you're not an author, before you kind of even got there, I had this very naive notion that you just wrote a book, and if it was good enough, you know,
yeah,
you would, surely you would just get published, because,
right.
Well, it's good enough, so,
right.
I mean, of course, and it's just not how it works at all,
no.
Is it, really?
No.
So, I think there's this, I mean, the notion of, you know, you just sit back in a chair and you write, be a creative genius, and then it just goes out into the world and other people sell it for you. It's just great. That hasn't happened either. No, shockingly.
One day we'll get there.
Yeah.
One day.
Any other questions?
Your granddaughter sounds like a hoot. She sounds like one of our tribe.
Yeah.
One of our, like, creative people.
Yeah.
And I love that child's energy around creativity, where it's just kind of like, I don't care if the world accepts me. Let's do this. Let's put on a play. Let's, you know, make a dress. Here's some paper towels. Like, let's make stuff. Let's create stuff. Let's just do it because creating is fun. I just love that spirit.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
I just got here, but I had a few points I wanted to discuss and ask you about.
Oh, please.
I'm a writer. I've written 4 books. I did self-publishing, the first one. It did rather well because it was an art-time book. Stupid all over the world. A small directory for a historical society. And then another one for myself. And my last book was a big book on healing practices from around the world. And that I went with a vanity press, I guess you'd say, one that says, this is your book, but we're going to put it together, and we have package deals,
mm-hmm.
and you can go in and choose the package you want, pay what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that works out to a certain extent. You have certain things that don't work for that, and some things that do. Now I'm writing a trilogy. It's a 3-part short story of Cat that Sailed Around the World. It's a children's book series.
Oh, cool.
And it's a global pussycat childhood that tells the stories. And I'm thinking of getting an agent and going with a traditional publisher. Before I go into that, though, I'll go backtrack a little bit and just say, since that book came out, it's been 4 years, the big book, over time, and mostly recently in the last year or so, I've got a lot of calls from other publishers that say, oh, we see your book is selling, it looks really nice, we really like it, but we think we could help you out and make it better. One, either by promoting the book, or two, there are another publisher of sorts that wants to take it all over and redo it and make it theirs. I turn those down because that's too much involved when I'm still trying to sell this book. But what I did get is a couple promotional things, and one was for an outfit in New York that had book clubs all through New York City. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, give us $500 and we'll put it up and get it out there for a month. And I did that, and it didn't really bring too much. They, you know, some young girl on the other end of the phone said, oh, can you do this? And I said, oh, well. So, but I let that pass. And later I got this one, it's called Book Walker. And they were supposedly the promoting, just doing a promoting package. They said, a special for $180. Put it up for a month and get it into all these sites or whatever. After two phone calls, checking in on it, it's, oh, it's going to be next week, it'll be coming out, we'll send it something. After that, I never heard from them again. Calling them 10 times. It was a scam of some sort. I don't know. They had a website and all looked nice, but nothing. So I'm curious about that kind of thing. And then, second, dealing with an agent for a children's book with a traditional publisher, those two things.
Well, I'm the only children's book author up here. I don't have an agent. I used an indie publisher for the first time and then went to a smaller boutique publisher for my... Finally, I pulled all my books off the press for the very reason that you said, the bucket list of we'll do this for this much money. I think, and Harriet may agree as well, as far as the marketing piece, there are so many people that are quite happy to take your money to make you the next bestseller. So unless it comes from a referral that you trust, that has shown results, I would be very leery. And I think if it's a publisher wanting to take on your book, I think they should pay you for your book, not that you pay them. Oh. That's my theory. Like if a publisher came to me and said, oh, we see Kino and Ernest's is a great book, we really want to have it be part of our suite. Awesome. Where's my money? And what are you going to do? Because I do know, I have a friend of mine who was picked up by, and it was a nonfiction book that she did. And she got a big check, she got a big, you know, picked up by the agent, great book, all this stuff. And she said after about a year, they were like, okay, it's all up to you now. So even if you get an agent and you go the big time publisher route, you have to be willing to do, and you have to be willing that first year, you have to be willing to do all of the travel, all of the book signings, all of everything. Because if you're not with your book, it's a book amongst thousands. So that's my 2 cents worth.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not qualified to comment on the agent point because I failed to get an agent multiple times. But I would say on the book publishing piece, the book promotion piece, the only one that I've heard consistent good feedback about is BookBubs. So, and I don't know if they do that for, I don't know if children's books are a category on there, but they're a newsletter that is sent out. They've got a massive mailing list. They send it out daily. They have free or discounted books they send out to their mailing list. And a lot of authors have, you pay to be included on that. And a lot of authors have said it's, you know, overnight transformed their sales, especially if you've got a backlist. So, you know, you put your first one of your trilogy on there and everyone loves it and it's free, and then they go and automatically buy the second and third ones. That's the only one that has got kind of consistent high quality feedback to say it is absolutely worth every penny. If you can get on that newsletter, pay whatever they want you to pay because it will be worth it.
What's it called again?
BookBub.
Book Club?
BookBub.
Bub?
Yeah, and it might be Bubs. B-U-B.
Yeah,
and I mean there might be other smaller ones that are less expensive, but I don't know, you know, I don't know whether they'll be reliable or not. But, you know, generally speaking, if someone wants to take your money, you know, they're not sure it's ever really worth it, unfortunately.
So I have a resource for you. There's a, I think she's a literary agent living in New York named Jane Friedman, F-R-I-D-M-A-N. And maybe a year ago, she wrote a book called The Business of Being a Writer. And better yet, on Facebook, there's a group. And I think it's called The Business of Being a Writer group. And you can go onto the group and just say, hey, I've heard about XYZ marketing services. Has anybody tried this? Does anybody have any experience with this? And I've just had super great, seen all kinds of feedback. People have tried different things. And then it's also handy anyway to see people posting about their experiences and what is working and what's effective and what is predatory and, you know, worth ignoring. And Jane herself will chime in with answers to questions too. So it's a really nice forum. And Joanna Penn, are you familiar with her? She's like on the group. She chimes in like a person. And Joanna Penn is another nice resource. She writes many, many, many books about self-publishing and marketing and many pieces around that. So that's another resource to look up. But The Business of Being a Writer, I feel like it's a really valuable group and book.
So they would know about agents, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. You toss your question out there and see what people say. People with all range of experience. Some are traditionally published, some are self-published. They've got like a committed group of authors. I've joined a bunch of Facebook groups, and sometimes you kind of get the feeling people are like, I'm going to publish a book. What should I do? And it's like, well, I don't know where to start. Good luck. But this is a group where people are clearly like doing it and asking really serious questions about, you know, Amazon changed their algorithms. Does anybody else feel like your sales are dropping off because of this and that? And people are like, yeah, here's what they did. Here's why that's happening. Here's how to tinker with the algorithm and that kind of thing. So Facebook, Business of Being a Writer.
Yeah. I will say on the Facebook front and from the children's book front, I have found that most, if you do a search on Facebook or any other social media for that matter of like children's authors or children's books and you become members of this group, it's basically, and I don't know if it's like this in other genres, but it's basically people trying to sell their books to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, here, share my latest release or whatever. So I sort of, I don't know how you do that. You mute them. I'm technically challenged beyond belief. So whatever, I muted the conversation so I didn't keep seeing all of these things. But I didn't choose an agent for my book. I didn't even choose to go down the path of looking for an agent because my goal was much lower level than that. But you can always get picked up after you've published as well by a larger, sometimes, and I don't know if this is true, but I have heard in the children's book world, especially once you've published, if you have sold a certain number of books, you become much more attractable to the bigger publishing houses. And you can go to them with a published book and say, hey, I've sold 10,000 copies in the last year. You should carry me.
Right. You just have to get to that level. If you're just below it, then you can't.
Right.
But I wonder, like this one, I can't remember the name, but he was a site. He had lots of good information, it seemed, and he talked about agents and stuff. And he said that if an agent sent out a letter to about 10 or something, and then once he likes it and he finds a publisher for you, then the publisher will pay you up front for the book. That's
yes.
The way you can.
Yeah, I think that's the
maybe.
Way it works.
Well, you get an advance. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
And then the advance, I mean, that's like a loan. Mm-hmm. With them, when you have a book and you start selling it, you basically have to sell that many books back to get that money back to the publisher before you start earning more money. So it isn't, nothing's free.
and I think that thing on the agent front, so you might find 10 agents that you like the look of,
right.
But, and you know, and actually it's worth doing a lot of research around what kind of books they represent and make sure that yours is a good fit for that agent and that they're likely to be interested in the work that you're creating. But also they've got thousands of people writing to them all the time, sending them similar stuff. So, you know, I think a lot of people find their experience of getting an agent is you send a hopefully personalised but, you know, fairly standard letter detailing your work, and then a lot of the time you wait 12 weeks and then, you know, some of them, if you don't hear back from us in 12 weeks, consider yourself not selected. You know, and so those are the kind of timescales, and 10, if you wrote to 10 and got an offer, you would be doing pretty well. You know, write to 100 and maybe get an offer is probably more the right kind of ratio. I mean, you might be lucky. There are lots of people who are, but you know, it's not quite as simple as just write to some agents and you get representation.
But there are agents that specialise in children's books, so you'd want to focus on those.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, just like there's publishing houses that focus mm-hmm. on specific genres and even within a genre, specific types of books. So,
you go to the library, there's a directory of agents, and you can look up by genre and see which agents do, you know, children's. And then you're going to need to look up every single agent's website and see if they're accepting queries and see what they ask of you, because they'll ask sort of different things. You know, a sample or no sample or whatever, and a lot of it's by email, so that makes it go a little quicker. But definitely find some kind of a directory. There's probably something online at this point, but I don't know what it is, that lists children's book agents looking for material.
So would it be good to stay in New England, having a little bit of a localness?
Go big.
Look everywhere.
Go big.
Good luck.
Well, I think I'm going to wrap it up. And I'd like to thank our authors for a good presentation.
Thank you. Thank you for coming out.
Yes.
And I want to thank WSCA Community Radio for letting us use their facilities. Thank Marilyn Carter for providing some refreshments. So we're going to wrap it up now. We'll have some refreshments. And once again, these podcasts are on mottpublishing.net. And this show has been going for about 2 years now, so you've got a lot of homework to do. To go listen to this.
Thank you. Awesome.
And thank you, Steve.
Yes, thank you very much for having us. Yeah.